Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Week 15 on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Andrew Mason, joined as always by Andy Lindahl of 850 KOA, Denver Sports 760, and of course, sideline reporter for the Broncos radio network. So you have a fairly unique perspective on the goings-on each game. So let's start right there. You're viewing it on the field. First half, Broncos fall behind 13-0. They can't move the football. They're not running the football at all. They're struggling to stop the run. From your vantage point, what are you seeing?
Well, it's crazy because what I saw in the first half is what we feared, quite honestly. You and I talked about it. What I saw was a physical Tennessee offensive line with two physical backs and a wild card tight end with a wild card quarterback running about as unconventional an offense as you could expect. And frankly, they just physically went after the Broncos. I think the Broncos played a more traditional set to begin things. I understood in the second half, as I talked to my buddy Mark Schlereth, they went a little bit more zero coverage and stacked 8-9 in the box as we get later in the game.
I think more of Darian Stewart in the box in the second half than I've seen all year.
Yeah. So they just decided, hey, we know what you're doing. We're just going to let you know what we're doing. Let's see who wins. And it was crazy to me. Look, the drive that I thought might break the dam, the drive that I thought might allow this thing to get ugly on the scoreboard, as I'm sure you did too, was the behemoth second-half drive that seemed to eat up most of the quarter that produced a touchdown. Mm-hmm. That was the one I was worried about. That was the one where the guys that I talked to leading up to this game that told me about what Tennessee was, that was it on display when Tennessee's at its finest. A physical team that pushes you around, picks up 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8 yards on first down with runs, puts themselves in a great situation, always has the advantage on second and third down from the yardage count, mm-hmm. doesn't allow you to rush its passer, and just beats the snot out of you. And we saw that in the second quarter. Amazingly, Andrew, I don't know how you felt. Look, when we went to halftime, I thought, wow, this might be ugly at the end, and I don't know what this does for the rest of the year. Then the defense does what the defense finds a way to do. They adjust, and you leave the game wondering, how did you let that one get away? Mm-hmm. I've never experienced both the complete despair at the end of one half and the complete how in the heck did you not win that game at the other. It was amazing how different that game was.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't like the Chiefs games 2 weeks earlier. They were when the Broncos were behind 9-3 at halftime, but that deficit was primarily based upon a free kick return, and you realized, you know, the Chiefs weren't moving the ball well in the first half. They didn't finally move it well until the end of regulation. The Titans, you know, you looked at that first half, it was complete domination. And to the Broncos' credit, they did narrow the gap. They did turn things around. I don't hold the failed fourth down against them because I don't look back and say, oh, that's what caused the Broncos the game, because that set up the field position from which they scored later. The one play that you really go back and you kick yourself on, well, besides the A.J. Derby fumble at the end, was Benny Fowler having a potential touchdown in his grasp and having it skip off his hands in his face mask.
Look, that one was tough. Here's how I feel about it. The offense has got to start being – they've got to make the plays when they have them, and they know that. We're not obviously preaching anything. They certainly aren't wringing their hands about in there. To me, the whole offense can look at itself and stick together for this point. Manuel Sanders has a couple of balls, one deep one, more critically probably one for a first down that would have kept a drive going near the red zone that he normally comes up with. And I'm not calling Emmanuel out, because without Emmanuel Sanders, you don't have the win total that you have. The guy's been amazing this year. That's why, it was so surprising when he didn't come up with one that was still a tough catch but would have given him a first down and well and within his wheelhouse. Demaryius Thomas on a certain play, I don't know how much they showed this, but the way I saw it on the sideline, Trevor throws one deep corner of the end zone. Thomas kind of pulls up near the flag, not expecting the pass to be delivered so deep. They misfire on what was one-on-one coverage and a ball that I'm confident in the right position Demaryius Thomas comes down with, and you have 6 points there.
Yeah.
You mentioned what happened with Benny Fowler. Trevor missed a read on the fourth down play that failed. Dave and Ed were talking in the booth saying there was an early window for the ball to be delivered by Trevor that would have made the play work. He unfortunately wasn't able to make it happen. There's one on Trevor. There's a Derby fumble. There's a Forsett fumble. Booker misses a block The line continues to have its up and down nature. So everybody on the offense can take a little bit of that one. You just throw it all away and you say, you know what, we're all in this together. We're going to get it done this week.
You have to. And the fact you have to get it done against a team that's 11-2. Granted, is without Rob Gronkowski. Looks like they're going to be without Danny Amendola as well, but certainly a lot of other weapons. They're seventh in the league in rushing offense, although it must be said that they were that a lot of their rushing production, and especially in terms of how often they ran, came early in the season before Tom Brady came back. They've settled into more traditional, for the Patriots, run-to-pass ratio. But LeGarrette Blount has provided a power game that they've lacked in recent years. And then, you know, and then the Patriots, you know that Bill Belichick is going to cook up some things on defense like he always does. It's a stern challenge, and, you know, the Broncos, I think, probably have to win two of the last three to make the playoffs. And that, and I think the most likely path, daunting as it may seem, involves beating the Patriots on Sunday. Because this also does another thing. If you beat the Patriots, you guarantee yourself a common opponent tiebreaker win over Miami in case it comes down to that. So that's, it's double the reason why you need this game. Of course, the Broncos could have guaranteed themselves that if they'd beaten Tennessee last week as well.
Yeah, it's funny for me because I start looking at the Steelers-Ravens as kind of the two threats all of a sudden. I'm with you. 10 wins, I think, gets you into the playoffs. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
If you win a tie, if you're in a good tiebreaker position, I think it gets you in, yes.
Yeah, well, and the Dolphins, I don't know what's going to happen because they're now, you know, they're at least down a quarterback, at least for this game. I haven't seen the long-term reports, but... Mm-hmm.
But they're playing the Jets, and, you know, they beat the 49ers last week with Bryce Petty, but, I mean, it's the 49ers.
No, I agree. But look, we'll see. Anything's possible. Yeah. That division is nutty. Let's be honest about it, Andrew. You're now in you're in the position you didn't want to be in. You're in a position which is why we said you had to have this Titans game. For those that thought maybe we made too much of it last week, this is why. Now you're looking at teams that are really without an identity themselves that you're hoping maybe you get some help from. Maybe they're good. Maybe they're not that day. And this is a good team. But look, I'll take this defense. They call it the tournament. Get this defense into the tournament. Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Give this offense a little... Because here's the thing. I think, if nothing else, the positive note that's come out of this season, now we see how it changes next year. You know you got a guy that can play some quarterback in Trevor Siemian. The kid has made some plays again, continues to make plays. He made throws, and I realize they scored 10 points last week. Look, as you said, winning touchdown was on Benny Fowler's hands. It didn't work out. He continues to deliver passes while taking hits. He's no longer, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, just making plays for what the play is drawn up for. He's making plays off schedule. You got to believe, and the guys believe in him, Andrew. They all believe in him.
The belief is huge. The fact that even though he wasn't as mobile as he would like to be because of the sprained left foot, he was still able to extend some plays by having a very good feel for the Titans' pass rush to get outside to give him give his receivers an extended chance to break open. The placement of the ball, that I think a big part of what Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders have done in the last two Trevor Siemian starts, when I think they've combined, I believe, for like four for 458 yards over those last two starts. A big part of that is the placement of the ball. Trevor Siemian is getting it to the outside shoulder like you're supposed to. You're seeing those plays outside the numbers near the sideline, the ones that are really tough to defend, that the defender doesn't really have a chance to make a play on. It's, you know, it's, if you get the ball in the right spot, it's a relatively low-risk play, then you just have to have the guy make the catch. And we've seen Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, and even in the last few weeks, Jordan Taylor has made some of those catches as well. There's a lot positive for Trevor Siemian right now. I mean, yeah, you know, if you look at it from 35,000 feet and you just see win-loss, you'll say, oh, they lost the two games. But I don't see Trevor Siemian as a primary cause or even a secondary cause of the losses. I think he's actually been a reason why the Broncos have had a chance to win. And that is an extraordinarily positive sign going into next year. Now, I'm sure there'll be some other changes elsewhere, and, you know, we'll see what happens on the offensive line going into the offseason. But, you might have found your long-term quarterback.
Look, he's playing football, right? He's not thinking. Called him a robo-QB a couple years ago. You know, that's what guys are. Dak Prescott's trying to break out of robo-QB mode a little bit himself and getting pressure now from the owner when he doesn't do it.
And look what's happening to Dak Prescott now that he's going up against good defenses. You saw, again, Minnesota contained him. The Giants' defense has played much better the last few weeks. They contained him. And now you have a Tampa Bay defense going out of Dallas this weekend that's played lights out for a month.
Yeah, Tampa may light the Dallas house on fire as far as the calmness. And, you know, they're going to be in a unique situation like the Broncos had themselves last year with Manning, with Romo just chilling there. Now, you know, I don't think Tony Romo's Peyton Manning. But if, you know, I get the coach's security blanket and the organization's security blanket of let's put a veteran set of eyes in there that maybe we'll see what you're trying to do that a rookie's not picking up on.
But to illustrate a greater point, I think this is true in the AFC and the NFC alike. It's like you said, it's about getting in the tournament.
Yeah.
This is a wide open postseason. New England, as good as they've looked, I mean, without Gronkowski, that is an explosive element that is missing from their offense. And if you look at the types of defenses that have succeeded in the late season, in the postseason against the Patriots, they've been pressure-based defenses like the one the Broncos have, like the one that Kansas City has as well. So certainly, you know, New England, 11-2, having a great season. I don't see them as a lock. I see the AFC postseason as pretty wide open. I see the NFC postseason as completely wide open, in part because you look at some of the best teams right now in terms of their current form. You're talking about Tampa Bay, Detroit, the Giants, and the Lions. And in that group, I didn't mention the two teams that would have the top two seeds right now in Dallas and Seattle.
It's wide open. It will make it fun. I'm going to also say this. I feel like once a week I complain about the media that I'm a part of. I'm not trying to be hypocritical, but I don't know how you feel about these things. Look, what the Patriots did the other night was impressive, okay? I'm not going to take too much away from them. A, you were at home. B, I'm tired. I guess where I'm getting a little frustrated is I'm tired of hearing about this number one Baltimore defense. When I went back and looked at the schedule, A, I'm a little surprised that they're number one because they've given up some pretty gaudy point totals for a number one defense. They have a number of games where the score reaches above 20 points, and you go back to the Broncos defense last year, you were struggling to score 20 points against this Broncos defense. They gave up, I believe, 27 or 26 to the Browns in one game, okay? So let's pump the brakes. Who did you face to get to that ranking? When you've got the Bengals and the Browns in your division, I'm sorry, that's going to take a little of it away. And you've already played the Browns, I believe, twice. You faced the Bengals one more time. I mean, Baltimore really does have a pretty good schedule to try to close out the season with. Philly's mixed in there, so there's going to be some interesting contests for them. But let's not act like, I don't care what the rankings said. I know Tom Brady wanted to point it out to everybody in postgame that they just lit up the number one defense. I don't think that was the same number one defense like you were talking about the Broncos having a year ago. And I feel like in the media, yet again, because we love Tom Brady and they love the Patriots and it's a good story, we're going to blow up everything they do.
And in terms of matchups, we've seen that this defense can rattle Tom Brady. Don't forget, it wasn't just the AFC Championship game. Got a fair amount of pressure on Tom Brady when he's, you know, with Gronkowski in the lineup in the regular season game. And, of course, the Broncos did not have DeMarcus Ware that evening for that Sunday night game in the snow. They're going to have Ware on Sunday. Ware just had another sack against Tennessee. So the pass rush, at least from the edges, is at full strength. Now, the big difference for the Broncos, you had Malik Jackson last year. You don't have him this year, so you don't have that same kind of interior push. And you've got injuries at inside linebacker right now, so I wonder how the Broncos are going to adapt, especially given how the Patriots had a lot of success late in the AFC Championship game with running backs on wheel routes taking off and exploiting Dane Trevathan and Brandon Marshall. Well, now you could be down to Corey Nelson and Zaire Anderson. So how will they respond?
Yeah, look, it's going to be a challenge. I'm not claiming this game is going to be easy, but this is where you get your crowd. Again, what amazes me is people seem to forget the Patriots, no matter how good they are, and they're good every year. It's amazing how good they are. It is a testament to these guys.
Maybe the most remarkable, long-term run in NFL history. And I know, yes, the 49ers strung together more consecutive 10-win seasons, and I know that the Cowboys had that long run from the mid-60s through 1985, that 20-year run where they never had a losing season. But in terms of doing in the free agency era,
right,
where you're getting picked over year after year because, you know, you can't keep a team together, your roster's getting it not gutted, but certainly, you know, poked at and plucked every season, they've been metronomic in their consistency. Amazing.
It is amazing because you can't build depth this way, right? To your point, those teams you talked about, the dynastic teams, are teams that put together a roster. And in the Niners' case, you put together a roster, you maneuvered that roster over, you know, multiple skill position players with Joe Montana, then you transition with those same skill position players when you talk.
And you always had a backup quarterback you could win with.
Yep.
Whether it was Steve, it was Jeff Kemp, Steve Young, Steve Bono, Elvis Gerback.
Went to Kansas City, never became. Elvis Gerback was the Brock Osweiler of his day, folks, just so you know. Although he did, they did lead the Chiefs to a 13-3 season the year the Broncos upset them on their way to
Super Bowl. And that's what I mean when you talk about Gerback and Bono. Bono had a 13-3 season in Kansas City. Although the Gerback 13-3 season, Rich Gannon started a few games in that, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there you go. Fair enough. I'm just saying, it's Brock's not the first one to Scott Mitchell, so on and so forth. There's plenty of examples of quarterbacks that have wooed teams for money and so on. Although, you know, the funny part about this is, if the Broncos do get into the tournament, as we like to say, outside chance, because you'd have to have a complete collapse to get to the fifth seed, and I do believe that if the Texans were to win their division, they'd be the lowest of the division winners, so they would have to face the fifth seed. They'd be the fourth seed just by winning their division.
Right now, that's the Raiders.
Broncos could face the Texans in the playoffs in Houston. I doubt that's going to happen because, again, the Raiders would have to collapse. The Broncos would have to leapfrog them. Mm-hmm. You'd have to take three games in a row. The Raiders would probably have to lose, three games in a row. And the Texans would have to win that division.
And Oakland draw San Diego without Melvin Gordon.
The thing. Last weekend was just not the Broncos' weekend on so many fronts. You lose your own game. The Patriots, frankly, probably did you a favor. We had the debate. I think the Raiders ultimately losing probably wasn't as good because we talked about it. You wanted them to lose on the Thursday night because you want to make the run for the division. But now you know the outcome of your game, you probably would have cheered the other way and wished the Raiders would have just kept running away with the division, which would have kept Kansas City closer to leapfrog for that five position we're talking about. And then you have the Chargers lose not only Melvin Gordon, but what's going on with Bosa? I know Bosa was taken off the field too. Is he going to be available? I mean, they're already beat up. They're going to be down. And the Chargers were set to face both the Raiders and Chiefs that you were hoping for help from.
And their morale is in the toilet.
Oh, yeah, it is done. They're already thinking about where we're going to move. The guys are just totally sick of it. Mike McCoy's probably gone. You know, nothing's staying the same, including your residence, no matter who you are. That goes for even Philip Rivers. I mean, it is not a good time to be backing or covering the Chargers. But I'll tell you this. This is maybe another reason why we probably should have wished that Kansas City lost. I would bet that Tennessee goes in there, and if they don't win the game, they may put at least a physical beating on the Chiefs this weekend.
I expect a close game. Because if you look at the Chiefs in this recent run, you know, and really the entire year, they are below average on offense on a per-possession basis, below average on defense, but they lead the league in touchdowns on returns, defense, and special teams. And obviously Tyreek Hill is playing a big part in that, and they lead the league in takeaways. So you figure, okay, it's a simple equation, you know. You know, kick away from Tyreek Hill and don't make mistakes. Now, I think the Titans, with, you know, we saw the kind of placement punting that Brett Kern, I referred to Sunday's game as Brett Kern's revenge with some of the punts that he dropped on his old team. But, you know, we see that Kern can drop it in, can drop it in the right spot. And we see that Marcus Mariota plays mistake-free football. The Titans might have the equation to go in Arrowhead and win in a very similar manner how Tampa Bay, when they were really starting their revival, went in Arrowhead and won last month.
They're going to beat you up. We saw that. Look, the Titans, hey, man, the Titans are a tricky team. Titans win that division. Now, if they didn't win that division, Broncos go back down there. Everything's on the table.
As a football fan, I would rather see the Titans than the Texans in the playoffs. I think the Titans are far more interesting and far more capable of a run that shocks people than the Texans.
Texans
are.
Will be another one and done. Yes. It may not be as egregious a loss as they had to Kansas City last year in that wild card round, but they're not getting a win.
The Titans can do, as we saw Sunday, the Titans can do things that give opponents fits.
Oh, they're tough to prep for, Andrew. That is a mammoth. That's the other reason why everybody's worried about the New England running game. And with the linebacker injuries, I'm not going to say that it's not a concern. It is. But to think that the New England Patriots are just guaranteed going to do to Denver what the Titans did in that run game, you cannot say that is a mammoth offensive line with two very big backs. It's not just LeGarrette Blount and, you know, a couple of guys. That Titans line is huge. They definitely have their formula, and they're putting it
together. And you can't tee off from the edge on Marcus Mariota because he can get outside, and Tom Brady is a pocket passer. You know, and the Broncos have had success hitting him, rattling him. He had a sub-50% completion percentage in the AFC Championship game. You know they're going to come out and try to do the same thing with a full complement of edge rushers. And what you're going to ask is you know that Derek Wolfe is going to get some inside pressure. You really need Jared Krick to provide some inside pressure on Sunday and take some of the pressure off the guys on the outside. If you can do that, then you might be in position to rattle Tom Brady the way you did last January.
Look, and the question becomes, do you commit to the run? Maybe they ultimately do. But you know, the Patriots love to kind of, hey, take this. They love kind of sticking it to everybody around the league, including the league itself. I could completely see them trying to come out and throw to make a point and maybe be a little stubborn about getting out. Because let's be honest about it, the Titans got a little stubborn about when they threw too. There are a couple times on those third and shorts where I don't know what you're doing there. I don't know, with that run game, why you're even putting the ball in the air. And the Patriots may have a couple plays like that as well, because that's what Josh McDaniels is. You and I both know that from covering him. There's going to be two or three third down calls a game where you just go, really? There? Really? Okay.
Too cute.
Exactly. Too smart for the room.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you just got to think about getting 1 or 2 yards, and instead you're thinking about making an impression or going for the big strike. And that's what, and the Broncos have capitalized on that Patriots predilection. I think another key thing is, and we saw this in the game in November last year. One thing the Broncos did, that when Tom Brady did go back to throw, a lot of pressure on first and second down, forced them into some third and longs. You got to keep doing that, especially without. And look, Martellus Bennett, he's very good, but he's not Gronk.
And the bottom line is the crowd has to show up. Look, if you're a Denver fan, we talked about this beginning of the year. You get a chance to affect every game with the crowd noise with that defense. It's a lethal combination for most teams. Mm-hmm. You had it, the Bronco fans, and it all feels like it was a month ago, but they were rocking. I could not believe how loud it was at Sports Authority for that Chiefs game. You just got to repeat that kind of atmosphere, not only for this, but for the Raider game as well.
Bundle up and bring the noise, yeah, Sunday afternoon, 2:25 p.m. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the AFC West Roundup. I'm joined, as always, by Benjamin Doesn't Have a Middle Name Swanson. Good to see you, my pal.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on here. Exciting time in my life.
Hey, anytime. Make sure to get your parking validated before you leave. Yeah. That joke didn't really land.
No. No.
Where's the audience laughter? That's a good laugh track. It sounds like Fuller House, which just came out. I think that show is not, quote, great.
Just like this show.
But you may be thinking that a subscription to a streaming service is a good holiday gift. We, meanwhile, are thinking about holiday gifts that are good for the rest of the AFC West. Did you like that transition?
Good segue. Good segue.
So why don't we just go ahead and get started? We've got four teams in the AFC West. What are some things that you think are on the wish list for each team, and no stadium jokes?
What should we start with? Maybe the Broncos?
Yeah, the old Brinkies, as they call them.
And I think if you're a Broncos fan, the number one thing you're wishing for this holiday season is the rushing game to get back on track.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that kind of stood out to me from that game against the Titans was early on, they had a second and one a couple times, and they couldn't convert either one of them. Definitely need to get better in their short yardage situations, and that'll help out everyone, I think, being able to get a little bit more balanced and extend some drives early on. So I think that's number one on my wish list for the Broncos.
Sure. I think if I'm picking out a gift for the Broncos, it's maybe something a little less tangible, and that's just getting a few lucky bounces. I think last year in the Super Bowl season, the Broncos had some things go their way that propelled them to first place in the AFC and to a Super Bowl 50 victory over the Carolina Panthers. And this year, those bounces just haven't gone the same way. You had that field goal by Cairo Santos in the Kansas City game that hit the upright kind of in the front and somehow went in. You've got Benny Fowler dropping a catch that would be a touchdown that put the Broncos in the lead, excuse me. against San Diego, you had some bad luck with Trevor Siemian still battling that sore shoulder. So if you're the Broncos, these last few games, you really, against good teams, you need to play well, but you also need some things to go your way. So maybe there's a fumble that bounces to a Broncos defender instead of back into Tom Brady's arms as he's strip-sacked. You know, I think that
can help.
Last
year against the Patriots, they definitely got some of that. They had a muff punt that they got, and that kind of kick-started that second half, fourth quarter comeback. So that'd be huge. Yeah.
What about the San Diego Chargers?
There's a lot on that wish list. I think number one would be holding on to the football.
Mm. So maybe some rubber cement.
Some mitts.
Oh, mitts.
Like that
would work,
yeah,
too.
What do you think?
I think maybe for me, what if we gave them like an infirmary just for their team because they've been really banged up this year.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon going down.
Yeah, and Bosa, concussion protocol.
He actually has a neck injury, Bosa does. Yeah. They thought it was a concussion. I think he's okay, but it's a neck injury, and that's not good either. They've had some really bad luck with injuries going back a couple, 3 years now, I would say.
Yeah.
They've been really banged up. In previous years, it was the offensive line. This year, more of those skill positions going back to week one with Keenan Allen. So, yeah, they've lost a lot of talent to injuries this season, and that always hurts. But
what about the old Oakland Raiders? I think if I'm them, I'm hoping for a rewrite of the NFL rule book. If you remember the last time prior to their Super Bowl season that they went on a deep run, they had that tuck rule game against New England. And there's a good chance that Oakland could meet up with New England again in the playoffs, possibly in Foxborough, potentially in Oakland. Yeah. In the divisional round, of course, before the Broncos meet either team in the conference championship.
Right.
But maybe a rule change so that Tom Brady doesn't escape with a tuck rule victory. It's very interesting to me to think about what happens if the Patriots don't win that game. Does all of history become unraveled?
No.
Well, it's
possible. I don't know.
Do they then win the second one?
I don't.
Which then becomes the first one, you know?
I think you're getting a little ahead of yourself with the Raiders.
What would you give them?
I would give them a healthy pinky.
Oh, for Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could use that for sure.
He looked just a little bit off in that Thursday night game. We kind of went over that a little bit more last week when we recorded the podcast after that game. He looked a little bit off. The rushing game was okay, and their defense kind of got gashed in that second quarter. But if they just make a couple of those plays late on in that game, they'd be right in there. They might have been able to tie that game up with a late touchdown drive and 2-point conversion. And wouldn't that have been something after Kansas City's game against the Broncos?
Yeah, it would have been kind of a little bit of a reverse.
Yeah.
Reverse. speaking of Kansas City, do you have anything in mind for them?
Just staying healthy, honestly. I mean,
yeah.
Derek Johnson going down is bad. That is really bad for them. That doesn't help. They've had some
stay on this podcast for the strong takes about players being hurt being bad. That's what you come here for, Reno.
They've had injury problems in the past, and Justin Houston's been playing well for them. They don't want anything bad to happen to him.
Yeah, he has been playing well.
He's been doing well, and Eric Berry's been great. And their defense is, even though it kind of has struggled at times as far as yardage goes, particularly in the rush, they still make those opportunistic plays. They take the ball out at any time. They have a really good secondary. And as long as they stay healthy, that could be a recipe to go pretty deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're a good team. If I am a Chiefs fan, have you ever seen Men in Black, Ben?
Yes, of course.
Do you remember whenever they talk to like a normie, you could say, they hold up that little thing that zaps them and they forget everything?
Yeah, a neuralizer, I think.
Is that what it's
called?
Yeah, it's been
a
while.
Or a deneuralizer.
I was only born in like 2012, so
I think it was a deneuralizer.
It's been a while. I would get one of those for the Kansas City Chiefs because, as you know, they have not won a home playoff game in a very, very long time. And when Arrowhead's rocking and somebody comes to town for a playoff game, whether it's after a first-round bye or not, man, it's kind of like the Cubs a little bit where at Wrigley Field you just feel the history, and the Kansas City Chiefs have blown a lot of games, not just at home, but you remember back to a couple years ago when they had that 28-point lead in the second half against the Colts, and they lost that game. It just hasn't been very – they won a game last year against Houston, 30-0, I believe, almost beat New England. But it hasn't been a rich playoff history for them recently. And you just got to – they have a good team, so you just got to go out and forget about what happened before. None of that matters. Focus on this year. And they say that they do that. But then I was watching the Cubs World Series movie the other day, and Ben Zobrist, the MVP, said – when the Indians hit a home run in the eighth inning of game seven, he started thinking about the curse. So the players know that this stuff exists. They know that they know the history behind their team. So if I'm giving the Kansas City Chiefs something, it's one of those deneuralizers. So they just forget all that. And they just focus on this year.
Do those exist?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
And that is a really good gift.
Yeah, actually, I'm getting one for someone for Secret Santa, so don't spoil that.
I hope it's me.
You won't remember if it is.
Oh.
Anyway, thanks for helping me put together that wish list. We'll be back next week, probably with a little more clarity about where the division stands. The Broncos likely out of the division race, but still right in it for the wild card.
A lot of things would have to go their way.
Yeah. I think they would both have to lose out, but I could be wrong about that. Mm. But when we talk to you guys again this time next week, we'll only have division games left to play, and it's pretty likely that the Broncos could have a division game in the playoffs at some point. Probably not the first round, certainly, but if they win a game and get to the divisional round, it's very likely that they could face off with either the Raiders or the Chiefs. So we've got the division on our mind. But thanks for joining me, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
Because now you're separating the boys from the little kids.
DeMarcus, I think you meant separate the men from the boys, but we'll go with what you said. I'm Caroline Disley, back here with the Week 15 edition of the Sound Recap. The Broncos are coming off a tough loss in Nashville to the Tennessee Titans, and it doesn't get any easier from there. They've got the Patriots this week, followed by a road game in Kansas City before hosting the Oakland Raiders at home on January 1st. But first, they've got to just take it one game at a time. They've got Bill Belichick and Tom Brady coming in here. But it's the only team that Bill Belichick has a losing record against, the Denver Broncos. The only team that the legendary coach Bill Belichick has a losing record against is your Denver Broncos. However, Coach Kubiak and his staff know just how tough it is to go up against a Belichick team.
When you play them, you know, you're playing a, you know, elite group, and they're playing that way this year. They've been exceptional, and, you know, we need to come back and play better. So, but we got all the respect in the world for them. It's the ultimate challenge in football. It really is.
Big, big challenge anytime you play New England. They've got a great organization. Starts with the top. Mr. Kraft is a great owner, and he's put together just an unbelievable continuity there with the coach that's coached for a long time, and you know, the top coach in the league right now, and then you got the top quarterback in the league. So they're a challenge anytime you play them. We're glad we're playing them here, but they're a big challenge.
I think about legendary, how much legacy that he's had and how much success he's had in his league. With the same thing of having a, you know, he changes plays up week in and week out. You don't know what you're going to get. You know, you have some guys that are, you know, I'll run this out of 12 personnel, I'll run this out of 13 personnel. But each week he predicates it on the defense that he plays or the offense that he plays, and they play well.
I mean, one of the best teams in football, if not, you know, the best team in football right now. So, and it's been like that every time I played them. So, I mean, you definitely got to be on your P's and Q's. You definitely got to be focused. And I think whenever you're going against great players and great coaching staff, it's just natural for you to just step your game up a little bit.
Not only is it Belichick and his offensive schemes and the defense that's really improved since last year, it all comes back to Tom Brady, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league right now, one of the greatest of all time. But he's just 6-9 versus the Broncos and 2-7 in Denver. So he struggled here of late. And as some of the guys on the defense will tell you, there's no better feeling than getting to Tom Brady.
Yeah, you know, when somebody's somebody like the Patriots, who's I just love playing against the Patriots. They're you know, Tom Brady's the ultimate competitor. You know, I love playing against guys like that. So, you know, when I say I hate him, I hate to love him. You know, that's what it is. It's a love-hate thing. It's like I love playing against him, but I hate him at the same time.
you know, he's just so precise in what he does. And he's a phenomenal player. It's kind of an honor to play against those guys. You know, you go through your career coaching or playing, and you know, they don't come along. Peyton Manning's don't come along very long, you know. And if you get to play against one of those guys, it's a pretty neat experience. Obviously, we want to beat them, but you realize they can beat you by the way they play.
Personally, I feel that we match up well against those guys. I mean, you know, with a healthy Patriots team, you know, having a healthy Gronk, you know, we matched up well across the board at each position, and we created mismatches, whereas Patriots normally create mismatches against other teams with their personnel. So I think us personally, we do a good job of creating a few issues that they normally don't have to deal with, you know, with our rushers, our linebackers in coverage, and, of course, you know, guys in the back end locking everything down. You know, I don't think Brady likes that too much, that kind of pressure and not being able to go through his rhythm and his progressions when he's got 5'8" hitting him every play, you know what I'm saying? So that's the difference, and that's the confidence that we have. You know, we feel like we can create that kind of disruption for those guys.
When you think about Tom Brady, a guy that's, I think about poise in the pocket. I mean, no matter how hard you hit him, he's a competitor. And he gets out there and plays. And now he's consistently, his whole career, been playing really well. Coming in as, well, I don't know, I think he's, what, a sixth-round draft pick or something like that? And now, you know, that doesn't mean anything. It's how hard you play, what you bring to the game, and he brings his game every game.
It used to always be the Brady versus Manning matchup the last couple of years, but now it's going to be Brady versus Simeon. Some may not think that those numbers are comparable, but since week 8, Simeon has had the third best yards per game average behind Kirk Cousins and, yes, Tom Brady. Here's how Trevor is preparing for his first Broncos-Patriots game.
I love what Gary's doing, and I totally agree. He's shown us he's got a great knack to handle a lot of pressure. Think of the games he's played in this year, and there have been a lot of big games for a young quarterback, and he's proven that he can keep a pretty steady mindset through an up-and-down, tough, close game throughout the season. And so when a guy's like that, you want to keep pushing him because, you know, they sometimes – players don't know how far they can go until you push them as a coach. And that's what Gary's been doing, and I love it because he has made strides progressively throughout the season for a young quarterback that hasn't had a whole lot of game experience in the NFL.
I think we're really confident. Obviously, not getting a win last week, that stings a little bit. But I think we're confident going in these last couple of games. You know, there's no reason why, you know, I don't think anybody says in our locker room that we can't win any of these games or – you know, obviously we're starting with New England, but we got a confident group. We got the right guys to do it with for sure.
That's all we've got for the week 15 edition of the Sound Recap. I'm Caroline Disley, and I'll be back next week after the Broncos beat the Patriots.
Time now for the best portion of this podcast. That's because BTV is in the house.
Heck yes.
Phil Milani here with Matt Boyer. We're going to spend the next 7 hours talking about how to properly decorate a...
Bad jokes.
Okay. No, but seriously, it is bowl season, finally, in college football. And some interesting news that came out. Leonard Fournette from LSU will not be participating in the Tigers bowl game. He will, in fact, focus on rehab for his ankle and focus his efforts on getting ready for the combine.
Yes. So you and I are split once again on this. You are of the opinion that he should play. I am of the opinion that what Fournette's doing is perfectly fine, and here's why. Because he's given LSU a lot. He's given his time, his energy. He's gotten a great education there, yes. However, you know, his future is in the NFL. He's going to make millions and millions of dollars, hopefully, in the NFL. And to assure himself of that future, he's going to say, you know what? I'm not going to play in the bowl game. I'm going to focus all of my efforts towards the league. And you know what? I can't blame it. He's investing in himself.
He's abandoning his teammates.
He's investing in himself.
Who cares about that? Like,
he's investing in himself.
Like you say, you play for your teammates. You leave it all out on the field. Not for this guy.
This guy went through a coaching change this year. This is not necessarily what he signed up for.
Let me ask you this.
For which he had no control.
Okay, what if he was in the same position and they were playing for a national championship?
He's playing.
Well, what's the difference? Oh, so the game matters.
Yes, the game matters.
Sorry, I thought it was just all about getting himself ready for the draft.
Are you of the opinion? These bowl games are money grabs anyways. And I think everybody knows that the bowl system, I think, to a person,
people could agree that it's flawed. You know, there's a lot of dirty money in these bowl games, the sponsorships, the schools get a lot of money. The kids, the athletes are not getting paid to play in these games. However, the schools make money hand over fist, okay? So, I mean, the system is flawed, I agree. But and I agree that if it was a different circumstances, he'd be playing. However, you know, it's his decision. It's up to him, you know.
Yeah, he gets to make the decision, of
course. Do what's in your best interest. And if you feel like your best interest is getting ready to play in the NFL and investing in your future, then go ahead and do that.
We've seen something almost identical happen like this before with Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
Has a tremendous sophomore season.
Yes.
Leonard Fournette had almost 2,000 yards his sophomore year.
Yep.
But because of the way the rules are structured, he had to come back.
I'm going to hit you with
this year, he rushed for not even 1,000 yards.
Right.
He's supposed to be Adrian Peterson. He can't even rush for 1,000 yards in college football. Give me a freaking break.
I think like what you just said, Jadeveon Clowney, feels heated, getting red in the face. I think that, like what you just said, I think that, you know, certain players, they have great sophomore years and then they kind of come down. You know, I think that a great example of it, like you said, is Clowney. However, I do think that Jadeveon Clowney, do you think that he is happy with the decisions that he made in college? He's
probably
in the NFL starting and setting himself
number one pick. What was he?
Number one pick.
Yeah,
he's so setting himself up for that second contract where he will hopefully make his potential's worth in millions of dollars.
I understand why he's doing it. Maybe what I'd like to see is maybe the rules change where he could come out after his sophomore year.
That'd be nice.
Because I understand that the player's got to look out for himself. He's got to look out for his family. I understand all of that. Maybe what they should do, instead of forcing him to come back and really not give it his all this year, because I do think that Fournette is a tremendous player. I do think that he's going to be a great talent in the NFL. But you could tell that he just wasn't into having to come back for this year.
What about paying the players in college? What about giving them a stake? I think if they're getting a stake, I think that
that corrects this problem.
Because
there's no way they'll be able to compete with the money at the next level.
That's true.
So therefore, he'll still be thinking about a bigger payday.
But one, at least you're being compensated, and two, you can still take out an insurance policy that guarantees you
which
some
he's
of that,
most likely,
which
done,
he's
right?
I'm sure he's done. But yep. I think at least that money that if you give the players a stake, guys like Fournette who are looking out for their families, he's had a rough upbringing. His family was hit very hard by Hurricane Katrina. I think that
he's got to look out, because what
right.
happens if he gets hurt
right.
in this bowl game and then he goes to he can't go to the combine?
Right.
That's going to hurt his stock. Maybe he falls out of the first round.
But
he's got to think about
if
all
if he's
things.
Making money in college, he can say, okay, I've got a little money saved
yep.
away. I've made a little bit. I'm going to make more at the next level. However, I'm not hurting so badly that I need to make this decision right now.
Yeah. It's an interesting take. Maybe it's something that worth exploring down the line for both the NFL and college football, allowing these guys to come out early. Obviously, compensating college players is a huge topic of
right.
conversation. It'll be interesting to see how it happens. But one thing's for sure, Leonard Fournette obviously looking out for himself, and he's being forced to play this season.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate point that I guess I was trying to get at, because I understand why he doesn't want to play in this game. It
right.
makes complete sense. We saw it happen with Shane Ray. Mm-hmm. Other reasons he fell, but he got hurt in his bowl game.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he fell in the draft. So definitely interesting takes for a college player looking to enter into the draft playing in that bowl game.
Right.
It's a very scary time for all college players around the league.
Get to the pooks.
All right, let's get to the AFC West picks. Let's start with the Titans. Team the Broncos just saw playing at Arrowhead.
Oh, gosh. You know, I think that the Kansas City Chiefs are playing some of the best football in the NFL right now. I think the Titans, while I think the Broncos had an off day against the Titans last week, I don't think that the Titans are going to be able to run the ball on the Chiefs like they were able to run the ball last week. I think the Chiefs are the too many weapons. I think Tyreek Hill has really come into his own these last couple of weeks. I like the Chiefs.
I really want to pick the Titans here because I do think
in
that
Arrowhead,
the way that they've been playing, they can win on the road. They can win in bad weather. DeMarco Murray breaks a couple loose, and it's a completely different type of ball game. I want to pick them, but I'm sticking with the Chiefs. A lot of the reasons you said, that defense is playing really well right now.
Yeah.
They're forcing turnovers. They're making plays. They're getting explosive, game-changing plays in special teams. And it would almost take a perfect game from the Titans.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure if they're going to get that done. Looking elsewhere, the Raiders at the Chargers.
Raiders at the Chargers, a divisional matchup. The Raiders have two games left in division on the road. This is one of them. The next one will, of course, be against our Denver Broncos on January 1st. You know, the Chargers have just have really been bitten hard by the injury bug these last couple of years down the line. I mean, Joey Bosa injured, Melvin Gordon injured. Those are two of the hallmark players of the season for the Chargers. I don't know if they can overcome both of those injuries on each side of the ball. I like the Raiders.
Interesting to see how Derek Carr responds this week.
Yeah.
He had a tough game against Kansas City.
It's 10 days rest.
He had 10 days rest, but I'm interested to see how he bounces back.
Right.
Because I think that he may have eliminated himself from MVP talk there with the performance against the Chiefs, but great players always bounce back that next game. And I think he's a great player. I think he's going to bounce back, and I think that the Raiders will get it done.
If for whatever reason, and I hope this doesn't come to pass, the Raiders win the next three games and somehow fall into that number one seed, he's going to be the MVP. He's got to be the MVP.
I don't know.
Well, if they win the next three, assuming they win the next three, okay, so you've got the Chargers. I think they've got the Colts next week, and then they've got us.
Dak may have taken himself out.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Tom Brady he'll still be right there.
Well, it comes back to the argument we made last week. Can you miss four games and still be the MVP? I don't know.
We shall find out. Well, that's going to do it for the BTV portion of the podcast. Enjoy the games this weekend, and maybe next time we'll talk about how to properly decorate a Christmas tree.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, well, looking forward to it. For Matt Boyer, I'm Phil Maline. We out.
Deck the halls.
Choo-choo.
I think that episode might have been the best.